Good morning and Happy New Year. The last time I saw you was last year, so it's appropriate, right? Dave, I'm still in the process too of finding out who I am. So, but for those of you who may wonder about that name, well, if you really look at my, I started out with the name of Bayo Oludaja. My middle name was J, which is the Joachim. All right.
Your
bike. Am I on?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it?
Yeah.
Are you all right? So, the middle name was Joachim then, and then when I naturalized, it was a new identity, so to speak. And as I reflected on the true meaning of Joachim in its Hebrew, it has to do with God has set up, God has established. And that's what I truly believe God has done in my life. He has established me. He has set me up, so to speak, to be where I am. So I decided then to make the Oludaja my middle name, and now the Joachim, my last name. But it's still the same me. It's just a reflection, my own way of going through my own, middle age crisis, if you want, dealing with it. That was it. And I asked Dave to read John chapter 6. I'm actually going to be focusing on that in the next message. But I want you to think about that before then. Because it's a passage that you see is recorded in all the four Gospels. And if it is recorded four times, then it is not too difficult, it is not too much for us to read it two times. And so we will read it again during that time. But there's also a part of it that relates to what I'm going to be sharing with you. First, I want to thank you all, and I thank the Lord too that you prayed for me over the Christmas break. I agonized a lot about whether or not I should go to Haiti. The last time I spoke here, I was not wearing this. You were not either. It's a different world now. And I agonized particularly over two main things. One, the security issue. How I will get from Port-au-Prince, which is the capital, to Williamson, where I was stationed. And I knew that as long as I could fly in, that was not an issue getting to Port-au-Prince. But from Port-au-Prince, which is about just, if everything were to work well, it would just be about an hour and a half. Sometimes it can take longer depending on the traffic getting out of Port-au-Prince itself. But the real concern was the fact that there is a wave of kidnapping going on. It was going on then, and it's still going on now. So what will happen? And I told my colleagues, I said, okay, just be ready. Because if they kidnap me, they're going to be calling you for millions of dollars. Which is really what happens there. They will kidnap somebody, and then they can get hold of your cell phone or anything, and then just contact people. They ask for ransom in dollars. All right. So that was a big concern. And as I said, I'm glad you prayed for me. Thank you so much. Because as you can tell, I went and I'm back with you. And it's really God answering prayers. The second concern I had was that of COVID. That was a big concern that I had too. And I went in carrying masks and sanitizers. I knew that if I got to Williamson, I could just isolate myself. It was not an issue that way. But I was concerned about the people around me too, so I carried some of those things. And when I got to the airport, there were people too who wore masks at the airport. But once you get outside of that, it was as if COVID was a heresy. And you will see from just the slides that I will show you now. For them, it was just something they heard about, as it were. Now, there were cases, that doesn't mean there are no cases there, because if you go to a part of Haiti, they call, Port-au-Prince, they call it Delma. There are cases there. But in the area where I was, the people were just about their business, like nothing. So even when I got to the airport in Port-au-Prince, they had me put down my number, contact number, because they were going to follow me and see just what was happening. That's their way too of contact tracing in that case. So again, I thank the Lord. I came back 2 weeks earlier than I usually do so that I could quarantine. And I came back on the 30th of, my flight was actually on the 30th, but I didn't arrive until the 31st. That's another story too. You know, going in, I had a 12-hour layover in Miami. I got to Miami at 11 p.m., and my flight did not take off until 11 a.m. the following day. Then on my way back, I arrived in Dallas, and I was supposed to fly from Dallas directly to... I arrived in Miami. I was supposed to fly from Miami directly to Dallas, but then we were diverted to go to Houston because two of the traffic control officers in Dallas had tested positive. And so they cleared the whole thing, and they had to sanitize. And they had to sanitize. They had to sanitize and clean everything up. So that...
Just take the mask off.
Okay. Thank you, brother.
Is that the reality we live in?
That is true, yeah. So that then everything will be saved. So I got diverted, and that was why I didn't make it back until the 31st. But I had 2 weeks complete, and thank God nothing happened. Well, this boy here that you see, his name is Davinsky. He's one of the twins that you've heard me talk about, and you'll see more about them. He's the one to the left there. He was 3 months old, and his sister, they were both 3 months old when I met them. And they did not know who their dad was. Their mother passed away the very day they were born. And it was their older sister who had dropped out of, she took time off from school to take care of them. That was when I met them. And then, I held that boy in my hand, and I thought he was going to pass away. I was praying and said, Lord, don't let this boy die in my hands. Because what will I do? I was concerned about that. And as I got to relate to them later, I was even afraid because I really didn't know the mom. I didn't know anybody, I didn't know the relatives too. And I was concerned about whether this boy even had AIDS, whether the mother was involved with all of that and so on. And the Lord has taught me so much through the lives of these kids that I will talk about later. But besides that, now, here is a person's house. The house in which a person lives in Williamson. This is an elderly woman. That's the side of it, all the to the complete house. An elderly woman that I met at the church, and we'll see the church building shortly. So I noticed that that was the first time I had seen her there. So after service, I went, I asked where she lived, and I went over to visit. Because one of the things I do there is I go into the community and visit with people and talk to them. So I visited with her, talked to her, and just she had some concerns about her daughter who was expecting a baby. And there was a concern as to whether the baby would even arrive or whether the daughter herself would live. So I prayed with her. And after that, I kept visiting, her. Then, last year, I went, and it was raining, and I went to visit her. And as I looked inside that house, pools of water. Because, you see what it was like there. So I came back and I thought to myself, look at my garage, where my car is. Honestly, my car doesn't even suffer that. And here's a human being who experiences this. So I decided that there was something I should do. I'm becoming more and more convinced that when the Lord makes me aware of a situation, he's not just informing me. He's inviting me to walk with him in that sense. So I decided that we should try and give her something. So that was how this house was built. And the boy you see in the picture is one of our kids who grew up in the orphanage. His English has improved a lot, so I take him with me to the community. First of all, so that, again, he can help me improve my own Creole and explain to the people what I was actually saying, but also so that he will have an understanding of life outside the orphanage, because most of them take life for granted within the orphanage. Mm-hmm. They have their needs met, and I wanted them to know that outside there are needs, and that they will be able to think about the future too. So he went with me, and the girl there, that is the sister of the boy that you just saw earlier on. So that's the lady, the grandma, I call her Grandma Jetha. That's the one whose house. And she's standing proudly in front of that. But the interesting thing is that she still keeps that old house right there as a reminder of things. So that's one of the things. So that's part of the new house. And that's, for us, it's nothing, but it is a significant improvement. That way. Now, here, this is another building. That's the kitchen. Look at it here. That's the kitchen. That's the stove. As you can see there. So on this last trip, I decided that there should be, because when they are cooking and it's raining, there's nothing else they can do. That's just what it is. So I commissioned the building of a new kitchen. And that's what you see there. Those are two young guys, and they're handling everything, sawing by the hand. They don't have all these power tools that we have here. Then there's a village, about 15, we'll see some of the things later on. There's a village about 15 miles away from Williamson. One of the teachers at the high school is from that village, and I have visited them from time to time there. So each time I come, as soon as he hears that I have arrived, he will ask, when are you visiting us? And the villagers tend to expect now that if I'm in town, I must visit. So I go there, and this was one of my visits there. And as you can see, there's no social distancing, nothing like that. Reality. And somewhere in the middle here is me. But you can't see me there. You'll see later on. See? So this is where I go and distribute things. So some of the things that I get and take with me, see? like soap. They always ask me for medicine, and I'm not a doctor. But honestly, just rash. They will ask, do you have something for rash? Heartburn. They will ask me. Antacids, those things, they don't have. Or it's not that there is no pharmacy, but when somebody makes $5 or less than $5 a day, and I mean for a whole day, and they have a family of four, five, or more, how can they afford that? There's never a time I go that people don't ask in terms of either medicine or that they have a child who has this, and they say, have you been to the hospital? They will say no. Why? Because to go to the hospital, you have to pay for a card, and then every time you visit, now it's a 250 goods, which is less than, it's just about 250, all right? But they can't afford it. Most of them can't afford it. So anything that I think, I took penis, soccer, so that they do that, they can just have them two teams and different games and play that way. You can see some of that. So now, again, I'm in there. They are looking at what do I have in my bag? What am I going to bring out next? That's what exactly what you see going on here. And the guy that I said is the teacher with whom I go there, he's the one you can see the right there. I will usually bring something out and then I'll give it to him and I say, okay, you look around and see who should have this. So there he is. And you see people now reaching out, asking him, give me. So in the middle there you see you can see my heart. That's me right there. And here I went in wearing masks, right? And the people don't maintain any social distance, no masks. Knowing what I left behind, I was gravely concerned. I was. But one thing that kept, just the Lord kept reminding me of was that before I left, number one, I knew you were praying for me. And I had also taken some time to say, Lord, again, I don't want to be foolish. I don't want to act foolishly. But I also don't want to be a coward. See? So if this is what you're asking me to do this time, I'm willing to go. But it was not easy. Being surrounded that way too, I was concerned about my own health and all that. So, but again, here I am telling you the story, and you know God has been faithful. So here with Francie, will this fit this guy? And he was looking at me to say, what do you think? And I said, yes, that's good. So he went ahead and gave it to him. So you see all this. Now, that's my, you can begin to see me a little bit there. And the boy on my left there, that's the first boy you saw, Davinsky, that's his name. So he went with me there. And then there he is again. So now you can see me a little bit more that way. And you see hands stretching out there. And what are you getting here? So now, at the end, I asked those of them who were in school, get together, those who were doing well, and I asked them some questions, and I told them that if they continue to do well and I hear good reports when I get back, that I will have presents for them, special presents for them, just to encourage them. And so those are the ones who gathered together with me there. You can see them. And you see to the left there, that's somebody's house. I don't know if you can see it clearly. there. That's somebody's house right there. All right. So that's the kind of situation. And now back to the kitchen and all of that. The kids we had at the orphanage, a couple of years ago, we decided that we should try and reconnect them with any known relatives. And that was what we did. On one of the trips, I went and located the relatives, and so we reconnected the kids back to the relatives. Because when a child ages out of the orphanage in Haiti, there's really nothing, no plan for them. And by the time some of them age out, they are alienated from any known relatives. And since there's really no provision for them, some of them end up on the street. So we decided we didn't want that. And as we relocated them, reconnected them, we decided that, okay, we will continue to feed them so they will come back every month and pick up food so that the relatives will not say, oh, here's another burden. We are even struggling to feed ourselves now, this one. And we didn't want to just give money to the relatives because we also know that if we did that, they probably wouldn't use it to feed the kids either. So we provide the food, and then we pay for their school, so they still have to go to school wherever they are. We pay for the school, and medical expenses, if those arise, those are the things we do. But every time that I go back, especially over Christmas break, they come back so that they all come and I have a Christmas party for them. So this is this last year's Christmas party. And you can see the food there. The lady in the middle there, that's one of our workers. She grew up in an orphanage herself. And if we had not employed her, she would have nothing to do by now. Just as a case of the situation there. So she speaks good enough English, and of course, having grown up in an orphanage, then she understood the condition and is now working with us there. So what I did too was we invited some elderly women, especially widows, including Grandma Jetha that you saw. We invited them to come to the party so that they could also have something. Because we knew, especially those who do not have maybe people who really take care of them, and it's a Christmas season. And in Haiti, some celebrate Christmas on the 24th, some on the 25th. But it is something they recognize and they do celebrate it. So they came and participated in that too. And that's what this is all about. Then back to the kitchen and its completion. Now, here's a classroom. Here's a classroom. Nothing fanciful. Nothing fanciful. That's what. And that's a wall dividing just one classroom from another that way. You see the classroom and the desks there. That's what it is. That's the chalkboard. You can see. That's all there. You see the desks. That's just something as basic as that. And yet, I think I was telling Dave earlier that, you know, just this last year, in Haiti, the school system goes to 13th grade because they operate by the French system. And at the 9th grade, you have to take a normed exam, national, in that case, to get into the 10th grade. Then when you get to what they call a philo, which is the last grade, you have to take a standard exam too by the just national exam. And if you pass, then you get your high school certificate. Right. Out of all those who took the ninth grade exam, only one of them flunked this last year. And out of the 40 who took the PhilU exam, which is the final exam, everybody passed. But look at the school, look at the classroom condition. Look at the classroom condition. And the good thing about this, about the Haiti, is that because it has some Catholic, Roman Catholic roots, so on, we can teach the Bible. In fact, we offer the students English, Spanish, French, Creole, which is their language anyway, in addition to just the other curriculum that they will be required to take. But that's one thing. Now, those two there, they are my twins, the brother and the sister that you saw at the beginning. If you remember that picture, look at what God has done in their lives. It's at the same deal, right there. See them? And there they are. God has used these two kids to teach me a lot about himself and about my own relationship with him. Even on this last trip, usually when I go, they will come and stay with me wherever I stay. And I have two twin mattresses. So there's just one bed with one mattress. So I took the one from that bed and just put it on the floor so that we had two twin mattresses on the floor. And I will have to sleep in between them for two reasons. One, the boy will go all over the place. You put him here, you never know where he's going to end up. So if he rolls, he will roll and hit me. But the second thing, too, is that when they wake up or they just, if they roll around and they cannot feel me, the boy will cry out and say, "Papa." Honestly, that's what he does. He says, "Papa." And if he says that twice and I don't say something, the next cry is going to be, it's not just saying "Papa," but you can see the tone that he's crying that way. The sister, if she notices that she can't touch me, then she will get up to try and find out, "Where are you?" as they say. But in either case, they both reach out. They feel me. And once they know that I'm there, they are satisfied. They are pleased. And I ask myself, when I have anxieties, when I have concerns, when I have worries, what do I do? Can I say, "Papa"? Can I reach out and feel my Lord? Can I be assured of his presence? And why can't I do that? And every morning when I usually wake up before them, of course, we pray before we go to bed, and then they will say, "Okay, whose turn is it to pray?" They are at that age now where they will pray. And then sometimes they will say, "You pray," and you pray in English. But I also try to pray in Creole with them so that they can understand in terms of at least what we are saying. And they will pray for their family, they will pray for everybody that they can think of that way, to the best of their ability. And when they wake up in the morning, the girl will just come and just open her arms like that. That's what she does. That was just asking me to embrace her, to just, then I would lift her up and just hold her like that. And then she's okay, I want to go pee pee. Then she would go. And then the boy, he's usually the last to wake up. But also he goes to bed later. The girl goes to bed earlier and it's up early too. The boy will get up too, and then he would look at me to make sure that yes, I'm there. And he would ask how he slept the night before. But they're always in contact. And it's okay. Wouldn't it be a good thing too that every time, just to feel God's embrace and to know his security, his assurance. These little kids, they look up to me. In a sense, it's like I'm everything to them. Because when they look around and they see that, well, I provide for them to some extent. And that's where their confidence is. And so I ask myself then, who is my provider? Who is my sustainer? And so that's part of what I'm saying, that they teach me a lot. Not only do they remind me much about myself, especially when they get naughty, because like the girl did not go with me to the town, the Toma, because she misbehaved. And I told her, okay, you stay back at home. But then when I came back, as soon as I came back, she came running to me and that. And I guess, okay, when God disciplines me, what do I do? Do I keep running to him? Which is really what I should be doing. And I talk about the situation in Haiti as a whole. There are needs there. Every time I go, they ask me, of course, with cell phone and all of that. You know. So, by the way, if any of you have cell phones that you have updated and you are not using them, that's okay. As long as they have, you can insert SIM card in it, throw them my way, and I will take them. So, people around, one of the good things that happened on this last trip was the lady that I showed you is our worker. 4 days before I left, her mother passed away. I knew the mother was sick, you know. So the mother passed away, and then while I was there, I went to the wake keeping. And it took us 10 hours to get to the place with traffic and everything. Then on our way back, it took us 12 hours because we got into heavier traffic in Port-au-Prince. And while we were in Port-au-Prince, in the traffic, we actually heard gunshots. Because there are gangs there. In fact, there are 9 gangs. And they have formed an association. And some of those are the ones involved in the kidnapping and so on. But again, as God will have it, nothing happened to us before we got through the traffic and then headed back home. Mm-hmm. But so we went there and came back under that situation. So on the day we came back from that great keeping, there was a young man, 22-year-old, who had died from a motorcycle accident. Caleb will tell you what they do with motorcycles. Tap, everything. They can have 5 people riding a motorcycle. And some of those will have loads on their head. So this young man died from that accident. And it was a shock for the entire community. Because he was a gentle boy, easygoing. And as a result of that, it opened the door for me too, talking to the young as well as the old, that, you know, we are all one step away from death. Every one of us, we're just one step away from death. and what happens after that. So it was an opening just for sharing the gospel with people there. And the reality is that as hard as life is in Haiti, it is also fertile. It is rich for the sowing of the gospel seed. So as you continue to pray for me, think about that. Those to whom I was able, with whom I was able to share, that God will water that that seed in their hearts, and again that God will continue to give grace, because Lord willing, all things being equal, I plan to be back there again in the summer, and eventually, even looking ahead in terms of the future, when I do retire, because of the school we have there, we have an open space in the middle of the school that we are trying to build something in there so that when the kids have religious studies or Bible studies lessons, they will come there and I will be teaching them Bible studies. We'll be doing Bible studies with them, and then so that they will be going in rotation that way. That's part of the plan for now. So continue to remember that in your prayers. And the needs there are great. They are overwhelming. But that's part of what I'll be talking about now in the second half of the meeting. As we see the passage that was read, there was the situation, there was the question that the Lord himself asked, and some of the responses that the disciples gave, then the provision that they had, the reaction of the people, and then some conclusion that we can draw from those. So that's where we are headed, Lord willing. Okay, pray with me. Father, thank you that even though this is a broken world, it is still your world and you have not abandoned it. And thank you that you have the various nations of the world on your heart. Thank you for just giving me a glimpse of that in Haiti. Thank you for what you are teaching me, even as a result of my time there. And I pray that your grace will continue to just work in the lives of the people there, that you will draw them closer to you, even as a result of their needs, that they will see that their needs can only be met by you. So I thank you, and I bless you in Christ's name. Amen.